bad wigs, spilled blood, and a single baby arm. All that and more in this edition of the official Grey's Anatomy podcast. Executive producers Shonda Rhimes and Betsy Beers also give us the goods on the hospital merger, staff cuts both at the hospital and on the show, and the paranoia that infected most of Seattle Grace in the last episode of Grey's Anatomy. And now, Shonda and Betsy.
Hi, this is Shonda.
This is Betsy, and this is Grey's Anatomy. We're back after debuting, which was really, really, really great.
I think it was 2 hours of pure laughter and fun for everybody.
Zesty, fun. Yeah, that's a pretty funny episode.
It's hilarious.
It's like a musical, pretty much.
I know a lot of people sent me little tweets and things telling me how much they cried and cursing us for making them cry so hard. But I feel like it was a really necessary transition to get us to where we were going to go.
I totally agree, and I think that actually the Kleenex company should send us a gift.
Exactly.
Because I think probably the stock went up.
I think we did something.
Or anybody using, like, tissues. I guess we call them tissues, right?
I think they're called tissue products.
You have to tissue products, because if we say Kleenex, somebody will think that
that's... Go to Target and get your
TM,
Kleenex.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is when we get into trouble. See, we have to just zip it and use generic terms, which would be much more useful. But today we're here to talk about 604.
Which is one of my favorite song names. I always feel like somebody's watching me.
It's great.
A fine, fine 80s tune.
Which is actually 603. Yes. Instead of 604. But we're excited about 604, too, but we're not really going to talk about that
talking
today.
About the wrong episode.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. Yeah. Which is that great song that used to have this really great video. And there were always people popping up that looked ghoulish in a house, and the guy kept turning around. It was ridiculous. But a fine tune that we both enjoyed mightily.
That was a lovely ditty about paranoia, really. The theme of
exactly
the episode.
Exactly correct for this episode.
Which goes perfectly.
And I think sort of the setting of all this is really a hospital which is gripped by paranoia since... There's a merger that's taking place,
yeah,
and everybody's job is in question.
Yeah, at the end of the last episode, Richard announced there was going to be a merger, and now we're sort of stuck in the place before the merger happens, where it's nothing but rumors, and no one knows what's going to go down, and mm-hmm. who's going to get to stay, and who's going to get to go. And everybody's acting, well, they're acting like paranoid people.
Because nobody knows the truth, nobody knows what's really going on. And, you know, sort of at the center of this conflict is Derek and the chief, because I think...
Yeah.
Everybody's going to Derek and saying, what the heck's going on, what the heck's going on? And Derek, almost more than anybody, has been cut out of the circle.
And when usually he would be right in the center of the circle. And frankly, they came to him for the chief job, so he should be in the center of the circle.
And I think it's starting to occur to Derek that maybe the chief is not handling this as well as he could.
Also, he's pissed. The chief went ahead and did this merger thing without even giving him even a tiny heads up, so...
After he gave the chief a heads up that the chief's head was on a cutting block.
Exactly.
So, I think, so there's...
A lot of heads.
Some feet, too, but we don't need to talk about
that. No, that's a little much.
So I think it's interesting...
And a single baby arm.
A single baby arm. That's absolutely correct. Yeah, we can't forget the single baby arm.
Let me just say that when we did the storyline, and they... And I love children. I really do. I have one. I love one.
She really does.
One.
I know you may not, from looking at the two shows.
I'm baby obsessed.
She's baby obsessed.
When I saw the footage of the severed baby arm the first time they did it, I screamed at my television really, really loudly, that baby's arm's not cut off enough. Cut it off more. Cut it off more. And I called Bossy McBossy, Rob Korn down, and I was like, that's not a severed arm. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, when I want that baby's arm off, I want it off. I want it lying next to her. And he was a little upset with me.
So can I just ask a question? Was it semi-severed?
Was it
a dangler?
It seemed a little bit like the baby's arm had a little cut in it. It didn't seem like anybody had chopped off the baby's arm.
And you had to commit to the
Which is what I
arm.
Really, you know, wanted to. Now, it had to be hanging on by some threads. Because apparently, to be medically accurate, you couldn't just have a ripped off baby arm and have them be able to sew it back on without the poor little tiny baby bleeding out and dying.
There would definitely be that possibility.
It's a tiny baby.
It's a tiny baby. And by the way, tiny baby arm.
And let me just say, for anybody who had a baby arm severed, I'm not saying that I wish this on anybody or want it to happen to people at home. So.
Well, it's nice to sew the arm back on.
Mm-hmm.
So looking on the bright side, you sew the arm back
on. Well, and what I love is Mark and his sort of complete, Christina's panicking and, you know, fueled by rumors and full of rumors, and it's attached herself to Arizona completely inappropriately, just desperate to get on any case and be sort of under the umbrella of so much protection. And I love that Mark sort of casually comes in, sews on the baby arm, and says, you know, that's why my job is secure. I put baby's arms back on. And he walks out of the room. It's kind of great.
And it's kind of great.
Yeah.
And I think Arizona had every right to take Christina to task, although I do feel for Christina because she's been without a mentor for quite a while, and her incredible desire for her specialty has gone severely underappreciated in recent months.
Christina had me at her scary Mr. T voice for the bear.
Which is really, really good.
Yeah.
Everybody shows both their best and their worst sides in this episode,
I think. That was one of those ones where she makes the voice, and literally I kept just rewinding to watch her say it again because it's just funny.
Izzy's back to work.
And she's got a lovely head of red faux hair.
What I'm going to say about that, though, is just for the record, Katherine Heigl makes everything look good.
We had this whole thing about I wanted Izzy to come back, and I wanted her to have just the worst wig in the world on, because we're trying to sort of portray what happens when you have cancer in all the ways that it's terrifying and funny to the person who has cancer. Not that we're making fun of them, but that we're showing sort of like, and I had a friend who had a wig and it was terrible.
It's the trials and tribulations.
And nobody wants to tell you you have a bad wig, and it's what's frustrating about having cancer is no one will say to you, your wig looks stupid.
It's a really bad wig. So we actually had a wig show here in the office.
We had a full on like 80, Marianne.
With Marianne Valdez, who's our hair person.
Our award winning hair person.
Yep.
She brought down like 50 or 60 wigs.
We tried on wigs
all day long. I mean, basically Betsy and I tried on the wigs like crazy girls.
And I did funny voices.
Yeah,
it was pretty entertaining.
We tried on wigs all day, and we found all these wigs that when put on our heads...
Made us look like total
fools. Made us look horrible and ridiculous.
Fools.
And then they put the wigs on Katie Heigl's head.
And every wig made her look like a supermodel.
It didn't matter how bad the wig was.
It didn't matter that it was a really
She made the wigs look more beautiful. It was really frustrating. Let me tell you.
You actually tried to pick a pretty mangy-ass wig.
I picked the worst wig I could find. We put it on her head. And it was as if she'd chosen to have, like, an adorable little crew cut.
She looks like Mia Farrow in Rosemary's Baby,
for God's
sake. It
was really annoying. So then we had to end up going with a wig that was a totally different color to prove it was a wig. Otherwise, it just looked like Izzy had done something kicky with her hair.
Exactly.
Even when the wig was cheap, like the cheapest, like $12 wig, it was like she just decided to go silver for a day.
She could have actually accessorized it and boxed
it was
her uncle.
Insane.
So that was actually challenging and getting over that. But I think still the point being that how hard is it once again to deal with the, she's going to try to live with cancer. Which
and
is
try to be normal.
We have not seen much of. And try to be normal and try to integrate and try to go back to work. And every place she goes, there's a reminder of the fact that she's sick, primarily in the form of Alex.
Yeah, primarily. Well, Alex trying to take care of her.
Exactly.
But also, one of my favorite little moments is all the interns saying, like, my whole church prayed for mom's whole church prayed for you. We hope you're doing okay. Like, everybody's staring at her like, are you all right, Izzy Stevens? And that's more than frustrating.
It's also, I think, it's that thing of you're not just Izzy Stevens, you're cancer-ridden Izzy Stevens.
And now she's cancer girl.
She's cancer girl. And it's like everybody's... Mm-hmm. Like, talk, all they see is cancer. They see a really good wig and a good-looking girl who's got cancer.
Yeah. And I love that she's got this crazy red wig on, and nobody wants to tell her that it's a crazy red wig. And they're all sort of, Amy Astley's just walked in the door.
Amy Astley, who's our crack publicist.
She's late, is all I'm saying.
I'm going to say she looks lovely.
You look
great.
She's
wearing a very, like, kicky, very clean pressed top. And she's got her hair as opposed to Izzy's fake hair. So we're in good shape. And I think the thing is, Alex really focuses Izzy back on trying to take care of her health, and Izzy spends this entire episode really resenting that she has to.
My favorite moment, though, is when she pulls off. She's sweating so much in surgery, and she's exhausted because she stayed on her feet for 10 hours because she's afraid she's going to get fired, and she's like, take off my wig, and she pulls off her wig in surgery, which is, I have to say, one
it's
of my favorite
great.
Moments ever, and just put my cap back on, and she goes back to work, and I feel like she's trying, man.
She is.
She's trying her best, and then Derek says the thing, which is the point, which is Izzy Stevens spent 10 hours on her feet in surgery today because she's afraid she's going to get fired.
Absolutely.
Which is the point of the whole episode, is everyone's terrified that they're going to lose their job. So.
No, exactly. Now, you know what's interesting this season is I think Bailey is really being put through the ringer.
Yes, a little bit.
You know, Bailey, this is really, in a weird way, Bailey's a little like Job this season because she's facing these incredibly intensely deep fears herself about having lost George, trying to figure out a way to formulate and deal with it. And, I mean, here in this episode, she's dealing with the mother and son, which is just such a wonderful relationship, first of all. I mean, James Frayne and Adrienne Barbeau. Which
is
like
kind of amazing.
Pretty crazy-ass
cool. We were
excited
to get them. It was very exciting.
But dealing with that entire issue of mom won't actually go into surgery because she's worried about leaving her son, and which also just brings to mind all of Bailey's own issues about leaving her own child at home.
Yeah, being a mother.
The loss of George. I mean, it's there's a lot of stuff going on that Bailey's having to process. And the mixed relationship last year she had with Pete, not to mention the situation in her marriage.
Yeah, she's going through. And this woman who's sort of given up everything, literally everything, for her son. I think that resonates with Bailey in especially. We had a lot of talk about this storyline in the writer's room. At first, we couldn't figure out how mentally ill we were going to make the son. First, the son wasn't mentally ill at all. Then we couldn't figure out why the mother wouldn't have surgery. And at first, it was the son. Like, we had all these different ways of going about it. And it came down to the most simple thing, which is that he is her comfort. She is his comfort, and he is her comfort. So for them to go into surgery together at the same time, that was really the only way we were going to get her what she needed and what he needed at the same time.
And, you know, it's a really nice triumph for Lexi, who's crazy, tired, and crazy.
Yeah. Crazy Lexi is
really
one of my favorite
freaking
things.
Freaking funny.
Crazy Lexi is one of my favorite
slipping
things.
On blood, slipping on blood, running all over the place.
Yeah, just twisted in the wind like a psycho. It's kind of great. And I love that you know, Mark keeps sort of saying to her, like, become the Lexi I recognize. And she's just not in there.
You know, and culminating actually in finally at the end of the episode when there actually are cuts.
The cuts were heartbreaking. I mean, it was interesting for us.
You had a hard time picking who to cut.
Well, I mean, I want you to think about this at home. When we cut somebody from the hospital staff, we're firing them here at Grey's Anatomy, right? I mean,
it's a little problematic.
If we cut somebody off the hospital staff, they don't come back to work the next day here at Grey's Anatomy because their story is done.
Not everybody comes back as a figment of people's imagination, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we don't do that very often.
No, it's the special thing which was actually preserved.
There are people who've been here for a really long time who we cut. Mainly because if you've been watching the show for a really long time, it resonates with you when you see Nurse Olivia say, I've been working at this hospital for 11 years, what am I supposed to do? You go, oh my God, that's Nurse Olivia. She's up with George. She gave him syphilis. You get all that stuff. But for us, it was like, oh my God, this means we're not going to get to see Nurse Olivia anymore.
Yep.
And there literally were people who, when we did the read-through, they were cut, and I turned to the writer, Tony and Joan, who wrote the episode, and I was like, what's wrong with you? You don't cut them. They have to come back. Like, it was just painful. But then they said, you can't protest every single person. We have to make cuts that are going to feel painful so that the story will work. And I had to, like, go with that.
And I think the people who got cut felt the pain as well. So, yeah, it's just, it was...
I'm sorry.
It was bad.
But they're fine actors.
They're fine actors and will continue to work in fabulous situations. It was just, it was very, very hard. And it makes you realize how attached you get to both the reality and the fantasy of this.
Well, for us, what it was it became this very real, the storyline became very real, and we actually really... That scene where Derek says goodbye to people is really touching for us to watch.
Exactly. Now, how did you, because there was a lot of discussion about the last scene with the baseballs. Like, how did you actually come to baseball? Because I remember that there was a process that we went through in terms of what we wanted to do.
It wasn't so much a process as I started out saying that at the end of the episode, mainly because I thought it would be cool, I wanted to see the guys take the girls to the batting cages. And that's how it started. Then we began to talk about what would happen if we put them in tiny little cages and how it would film, and it wasn't going to work. And then somebody suggested a baseball field, which I thought was great. But there were still balls coming flying at, you know, Sandro's face at high speed, which was a little bit scary for everybody. If you look really closely, you can see Ellen's pregnant belly, which we tried to hide as best we could. But in that scene, it's not hidden.
It's not.
It's not hidden at all, really.
But hopefully you're just watching the balls.
You're just watching the baseball.
So
and I love how the guys have taken them out because they're all insane, have taken these women out and have said, like, we're going to do this very weird guy thing that none of them would ever do, ever, ever, without the men saying that they should. And frankly, without Owen yelling at them that way. And it's a great moment when Christina hits the ball. Here's the thing about baseball. You feel a bizarre, indescribable joy whenever anybody hits a ball, even though I don't like baseball. I don't know anything about it.
No, it's
Christina hits the ball and I feel joyful too. So.
No, you absolutely do. And you know what? Our advice to you, if you're a little anxious, slipping any blood.
Sports
is good. Go out, burn off a few calories, eat a burger, and pass out. Next week, we have a great episode coming up, which is called Tainted Obligation, which is not a song with an incredibly great video, as I remember.
See, I've gone back and forth and said, do you mean Tainted Love? And they're like, no, Tainted Obligation.
I was
I'm
so excited about Tainted
Love.
I think
you mean Tainted Love. They're like, no, Tainted Obligation. Then they had to prove to me that it was a song.
Was it really a song?
Apparently, I missed it.
I got all excited because I was like, I don't know, is it the soft cell version of Tainted Love or the other version of Tainted Love?
It has nothing apparently to do with Tainted Love, but it is apparently a song. It was proven to me.
Now my joy is crushed. So now I've got to listen to the song. You want to say a little bit about this episode?
Yeah. Next week's episode Tainted Obligation, not Tainted Love, is, it's a pretty amazing episode, I think, in terms of a lot of things. One, Thatcher Gray comes to the hospital.
Yes.
And if there's one thing I love, it's a little Thatcher Gray. So Thatcher Gray is coming to the hospital, which I think is going to be good and interesting and tell a story that's surprising in a lot of different ways. And then the other thing that happens is Ralph Waite is coming to Seattle Grace. Ralph Waite played the dad on The Waltons. I don't know if you know that, but he played the dad on The Waltons.
He played the dad on The Waltons. And let me say, he's not playing the dad on The Waltons on this
he's
show.
He's not a Waltons type dad. He's a man with a special need.
He's kind of the opposite problem.
And it's a special, special surgery for Mark. So I think that...
Say goodnight, John Boy.
Don't turn that into something dirty. That you is know, a treasured American phrase. Anyway, it's going to be an amazing episode. Very, very funny.
It's very funny, and it's also very heartwarming. And, I think the Thatcher Gray of it all is an amazing story and with a very surprising conclusion.
Yes. And when next you hear from us again, because we're going to sign off now, Betsy Beers will be a married woman.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest and I have
no
idea.
To be legally bound in matrimony to a human being.
Which is terrifying for the human being, I think, more than me even. I think somebody should be kicking that human being's tires, that's for sure.
You won't be a virgin anymore.
Somebody's going to have to tell him.
Exactly.
Very, very painful.
I'm Shonda.
I'm Betsy, and humiliated.
and this is Grey's Anatomy.
Thanks for joining us for another podcast. Watch the next episode of Grey's Anatomy, Tainted Obligation, on Thursday, October 8th at 9 p.m., then Private Practice at 10, only on ABC.